This is Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruriak. Jane DeLaurie's historical novel, The Balcony, won the 2019 Sue Kaufman Prize for First Fiction. The story takes readers through time and through many generations of unrelated families whose lives and drama play out at the same country home in France. Jane joined us in July of 2018 when the book was new, and I wondered whether there was a real place that inspired the estate that she wrote about.
I started writing these stories, drawing inspiration from a real forest, the forest of Châteauroux, France. My ex-husband's grandparents lived on the edge of the forest, and his grandfather in particular had a very close relationship with that place. And I developed my own relationship with that place through him and then through my morning runs when we would visit. And so over a period of about 15 years, I was writing stories that came from that forest. There are some nuggets of truth, of fact, but then much of it is my imagination. And the estate in the forest includes a manor house and a cottage. And the cottage is based on an actual abandoned cottage. But the manor is all my imagination.
But it's really about this balcony, and you've turned a place into plot by centering on the balcony. That's a challenge. That's interesting. You can turn a character into a plot, but the one constant through all the stories is the balcony.
I love that you say it that way. Yeah, you're right. And when I went to put those stories into a book, it was the balcony, it was the estate and the balcony that helped me to do that. That was the organizing principle as I put the manuscript together.
The very first story in your book helps us know kind of where we are. There's a young American university graduate. She comes to the French manor because she's going to work as an au pair. And she ends up developing a crush on the husband of the family. All of this is not the landscape that was in her dream world, in her fantasy. Take us through quickly how the balcony plays a role in that story.
The moment that Bridget, I'll call her Bridget, although she's Brigitte in France to her employers, Bridget has a very active imagination, and she's very drawn to stories and has an idea of what France will be like. And she ends up in this sort of industrial area that doesn't live up to her expectations. The balcony that's attached to the manor house where she's staying has quite a dramatic history because there was a suicide, presumed suicide, where a woman fell 70 years before. So immediately that captivates her imagination. But also in terms of the book, and when you say place is plot, we come back to that character who jumped or fell from the balcony sometime before.
It's actually a good place to read. Would you start at the very beginning of the first story in the book?
Au pair. In June of 1992, I left Boston for France with everything in front of me. For the next 2 months, I would be an au pair to Hugo and Olga Boyer's daughter Elodie at their country estate near Paris. The position came to me through my advisor at Boston University, where I'd just finished a master's degree in French and where Hugo would join the faculty in the fall. As Olga explained to my advisor, who asked me if I was interested, she and Hugo needed a jeune fille to help Elodie practice her English and to watch her mornings while Hugo worked on his book and Olga prepared the house for their departure. I would have a large, sunny room on the top floor and my afternoons and most of the weekends off. Paris, with all of its delights, is only a brief train ride away, Olga wrote to me in French, her handwriting large and baroque. Elodie is an easy child, and her father and I are not monsters. With the money I'd make, I could spend a third month in Paris, and then see how I might stay on in France, where I believed I was meant to live.
I wonder, in reading your stories, whether something is really going to happen, and then all of a sudden, bam, there is a paragraph that reveals and makes everything whiplash quick. Quickly snap into place, and the whole story ends up meaning something else. But it time hops. Elodie will show up in a later story. Hugo will show up in a later story. And I think in some moments, I maybe needed a matrix to keep everybody straight. Have you heard that before?
Yes. And I am always sympathetic to readers. I'm a reader myself. And so, and part of that, when we talked earlier about having a community of writers and having good readers for your fiction or your poetry, is that movement from what the author knows to what the reader needs to know. Because the author knows pretty much everything. So I understand it. I sympathize with readers needing to piece it together. It is very much a novel in stories for me. So I wrote it that way, where each chapter has its own arc, has its own character development, and stands alone. And I've found that that problem of putting, you know, everything together is also what many readers tell me they love about the book, that they love the puzzle.
Yeah.
It's probably a challenging book to read over the period of 6 months. And I actually put a timeline on my website. I've been visiting some book clubs, and I tell them, you know, if you're going to be reading the book over a few months, there is a timeline of the estate. So it's a timeline of the property, you know, for readers who want to double check instead of flipping back.
Yeah, you did make the choice not to go chronological, and it goes over many different decades and unrelated families that live in the house at different times.
The book decided what it wanted to be. I wasn't thinking of this as a novel in stories when I laid out the 12 stories that I had been writing. And I hadn't been writing the stories with a specific book in mind. If anything, I thought, oh, a collection. I love linked collections. I love Olive Kittredge. I love Winesburg, Ohio. So that form, of course, influenced me. But it wasn't really a conscious decision. But that's just the book that was there. When I laid them out and thought, how does this work as a book? The estate wanted to tell its story. And that meant that I eliminated some stories that I had written that I was attached to. I killed some darlings. And I wrote a pair at the opening. The book knew what it wanted to be. This is what authors, this is what we do. You have to believe in the magic of the process because it's so terrifying. But there is truth to that, that if you let the story figure itself out or let the book figure itself out, the result is usually what it's supposed to be.
Did anything in this book grab you and say, you have to do more with me? Put me in a next book or a next story?
The voice of Bridget or Brigitte in the opening story is a first-person voice of a woman looking back in middle age, and I am middle age, and I look back. So that reflective voice is something that I'm playing with more now. Most of my short stories were in third person. I'm very comfortable and I love third person, but I think I personally had to get to a point where I could write in first person because I needed a certain degree of distance. I'm a writer who works with a lot of distance. And so I would say that that first person reflective voice is something that I'm still exploring.
Has Brigitte been very close to you in many ways? Is she?
Fiction is so funny that way because I was talking to my daughter. My daughter is a fiction writer. And we were having this conversation the other day about how when you start to write the story, even if you are starting with a nugget of emotional truth about yourself, the minute that character takes over, it's not you anymore. So Bridget acts in ways that I didn't act. She's much bolder than I am in some ways. But there are definitely elements of myself in her.
Sacramento writer Jane DeLory talking with us about her debut novel, The Balcony. That was a conversation from July of 2018. Her book won the 2019 Sue Kaufman Prize for First Fiction by the American Academy of Arts and Letters. That's Insight for today. I'm Beth Ruyak. Insight is produced by Kate Gonzalez and Cody Drabble. Our digital team is Chris Hagen, Casey Gardner, and Emily Zentner. We had help from Helen Barrington and Antonio Munez. Our technical director is Mark Jones. Insight's executive producer is Joe Barr. Thanks for joining us.